Bezrat Hashem, wanted to quickly record a insight I had this past Shabbos. So we just finished reading Parshas Vayigash, where Yosef reveals himself to his brothers. They thought he was some Egyptian, and Joseph reveals, "No, it's me, Joseph. You sold me to Egypt." So after he fully reveals himself and says, "No, it's really me. It's really Joseph," I was struck very powerfully. The first substantive thing that Joseph says to his brothers is, "Don't be sad. Don't be sad, for Hashem has sent me, not you, Hashem sent me here to Egypt for a great enlivening, for a mechiyah gadola, for a great enlivening purpose. Because since Joseph was sent to Egypt, and eventually he had his dream, which got him out of prison, and all of a sudden he's essentially in charge of Egypt and all the wealth, because he interpreted Pharaoh's dream, that there would be 7 years of 7 years of plenty, followed by 7 years of famine, and so store the grain up for the 7 years of famine. But it's incredible to me, Joseph says, the thing is, he says, "Don't be sad." This is a very, 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 very big moment. So everything that happens in Sefer Bereishis in the book of Genesis is a seed for all of history. So this is talking about the end times of history, the revelation of Mashiach, the revelation of Hashem to the world. This is a very big thing. And the way the Midrash describes this event, it says that the brothers were so astounded, their souls were flying out of their bodies, just like at Mount Sinai when the Jews were given the Torah. It was such a shock that Hashem was really coming to contact the world, and their souls were also flying out of their bodies. So the first information, besides "I'm Joseph," surprise, is don't be sad. Don't be sad about what you did. Don't be sad that you sold me. It ended up working out in a very, very great way. So it's got me thinking. So sadness, in many ways, is the very worst trait we could possibly exhibit. Sadness. We have to be careful, because we're allowed to feel disappointment, bitterness. We're allowed to grieve and mourn. But sadness, specifically like depression, is something else entirely. To just be hopeless, sad, depressed is the very worst. It's even worse than anger, which is terrible, which is also the worst, but in a sense it's even worse than anger. Whereas with anger, a person rips up their soul and they have to replace it again after they get mad. It's not a good thing. Sadness can literally just completely lead a person to killing themselves, as we know, God forbid, or dropping being productive in life and just giving up on Torah and mitzvahs. So the verse says about the snake, the evil serpent, who tricked Adam and Eve into eating from the tree of knowledge, you will eat dirt all the days of your life. Hashem cursed the snake that he would eat dirt. And there's all sorts of meanings to this, but really, dirt, the element of earth, is connected to the element of sadness. Because there are four basic elements in creation: earth, air, fire, and water. They each correspond to good and bad character traits. So earth is, as we said, the negative sadness and depression, but also in the positive sense is humility and lowliness in a good way. Fire could be passionate spirituality, or God forbid, anger. Water can be loving kindness, or God forbid, misplaced desire and lust. And air could be speaking great amounts of words of Torah, the speech, or God forbid, wasting words and chattering incessantly for pointless reasons. So sadness is the dirt. Why? Because we bury a dead corpse in the ground. The earth, the whole universe, was cursed with the physical corporeality of dirt and the way that we know it now. That's where death comes from. Before Adam sinned with the tree of knowledge, everything was spiritual. And whatever vestiges of physicality or objectification was very, very, very spiritual, and it was not the type of dirt and dust and decay that we know today. So it's the essence of sadness. And we take this even further on a philosophical level. The Ramak, the Rav Moshe Cordovero, Yagen Elena, the Holy Mekubal and Tzaddik, is explaining in Pardes Rimonim, chapter 14, that the physical world is constantly dying and decaying. But not like we think, just like sometimes things die, but philosophically, conceptually speaking, he says, and we've spoken this out before, but I love this, and so I'll say it again. The physical world is constantly changing, and therefore its prior states are, so to speak, dying and being destroyed. So even when you're doing something productive, for example, you want to make a garment, a woolen garment. So you have to go shear a sheep. So there was wool on that sheep. Now you had to shear the wool off the sheep. Now the sheep is naked. And it's been the state of the wool on the sheep has been destroyed. Not only that, now you want to take the wool and you want to spin it and comb it and dye it and whiten it and all these things. So the prior states of unspun wool, unwhitened wool, uncombed wool, those states were destroyed. Even though I'm improving the wool, I'm spinning it and whitening it and so forth, nevertheless, the prior states are being destroyed. They're gone. All we have is a memory. And then it's not even just things that we transform, but simply the fact that a stone, despite that the scientists know that its particles, that even a stone is very slowly decaying in some way, but even if you just put a stone on a table and it sits there, and it's sitting on the table on Monday, now it's sitting on the table on Tuesday, in a sense, the configuration of material of that stone sitting on the table on Monday has been destroyed, because now it's the stone sitting on the table on Tuesday. So the physical world we can't hang on to it in a moment. Everything is constant. The prior configurations of the physical world are constantly dying. It's actually stressful. It really is stressful. This is where stress comes from in a certain way. But says the Ramak, the spiritual world is exactly the opposite. He says, because everything, and we know, Rashi says, the Midrash says, everything that would ever happen for all history, Hashem already created it in its spiritual root. And when things occur and events occur in the physical world, there's a constantly a burgeoning forth and a germination and a flowing forth and a spiraling out from its spiritual root to eventually materialize as that new event, that new happening in the creation. But unlike its physical counterpart, the spiritual root that came forth to express that new expression, moment by moment, item by item, situation by situation, that spiritual expression is forever. Forever. So whereas the physical configuration is here and gone, and we're able to even grab onto it because it's gone already, because it's the new moment. But Mashenkein, not so by the spiritual roots of things. Every new event, every new object that came out on the stage of the physical world had to be propelled and fueled by a spiritual root. And when that spiritual root came out to express that, it stays expressed forever. It's been gained forever. So this is a fascinating, like, philosophical, spiritual, Kabbalistic thought experiment of how, whereas on the one hand, the physical is constantly changing, breaking down, and its states are constantly being nullified to make way for new states, that itself is fueling and propelling the constant augmentation and increase of spiritual expressions. We can think about this very basic level. We all know anybody who's lived many years, you know, a certain amount of years. I'm 35 years old. So I'm 35 years old. Myself as a 14-year-old or as a 10-year-old is gone. But my memories and my experiences from going through all those days and years of prior days and years, the memories are still there and they're cumulatively growing and collecting. So the ingraspability and decay and death of prior physical states is actually fueling the life and the enlivening and the increase of spiritual expressions and fuller and fuller revelations of Hashem as the one who fueled and drove and managed and created and effectuated and enabled all of these experiences to occur. In other words, the memory bank of the universe is constantly increasing. And the Leshem explains this, was why we know the Rambam says there are 13 principles of faith, Yigimel Ikrei Amuna. And the 13th one, which is sort of the echad of them, the 13 is numerical of one and love, and it's the one that ties them all together. It's the 13th principle that ties the other 12 sides of the cube into a unity point, is this 13th principle of Tchiyas Hameisim, resurrection of the dead. We believe that at the very end, Hashem will resurrect the dead. Leshem says, according to the Arizal, this is not just that Hashem will bring the human souls back into the bodies forever in a good way where there's no more death and everything is perfected, such that the merging of the soul and the body is a higher level than just a soul disembodied, because now all the levels of experience are merging together, which is the greatest expression of unity. But says Leshem, that's just the makah papatish. That's just the final hammer blow. That's the completion. That's the crown of the process of Tchiyas Hameisim, of resurrection of the dead. But the fact is that Tchiyas Hameisim is a process that's occurring all the time. As the Leshem points out in the Enema of the Arizal, that in the second bracha, in the second blessing of the Amida, of the Shemona Esrei prayer, we say Hashem is Mechayim Hameisim. We say it 5 times, and we say it in present tense, because Hashem is constantly resurrecting the dead. And the way that we just described, He's constantly, through the very fact that He is energizing constant new unfoldings in the physical world, that itself is uplifting and augmenting and increasing and ever increasing the revelation of godliness in heaven, in Shemayim, in a spiritual place where not just the memory of what happened is fully stored and remembered, but literally there are energetic expressions of divine power that had to come forth to fuel those events. Those energetic expressions of divine power are realities that have, so to speak, been increased in their expressiveness towards this realm of consciousness. And we have been gained forever. So, says the Leshem, this explains why it's critical to believe in Tchiyas Hameisim, and it explains why the Gemara in Sanhedrin is so harsh and says if a person doesn't believe in Tchiyas Hameisim, they won't be zochei Tchiyas Hameisim. And we won't get into that because every Jewish person deep in his soul is ma'aminim b'nei ma'aminim, and we all believe deep inside. But the point is that it's very, for psychological purposes, for mental stability, it's critical to believe in Tchiyas Hameisim, because, says the Leshem, if we didn't believe in this, we would look at history and we would just see constant backsliding. We would see that even at the pinnacles of history, the Garden of Eden, the giving of the Torah, the building of the temple, at each pinnacle, there was huge calamities. Garden of Eden, Adam lost it through eating the tree of knowledge. The giving of the Torah, we lost it through the sin of the golden calf. The building of the temple, we lost it through divisiveness and infighting and Shlomo Melech making a mistake and marrying too many wives, which led to the breakdown. So on and so forth. So we would look at history and feel very frustrated. Like, we know, we believe God's in control of everything, but this seems like a ship heading towards constant disaster. Things seem to be getting worse and worse. But the secret is that's only on the physical side of things. Yes, it's true. And as we explained in the last couple podcasts, to our immediate 5 senses, Hashem designed history that it should appear to be getting worse and worse. And the reason for that is that there's a negativity in the world, and it's a ticking time bomb. It's set to expire. This is the secret when Esav says, Ani halech lamut, lama leave zebechora. I'm going to die. Why should I have the firstborn rights? That's what Esav Harasha says. I don't want the firstborn rights because I'm going to die. On the Kabbalistic level, Esav represents physicality, physical world, physical pleasures, an attachment to that which expires, a desire to be swept up in the impermanence of the physical world. Meaning to say, things are getting worse because, yes, even on a spiritual sense, there's entropy. Meaning that the negativity in this world is burning itself out. And as it burns itself out, it gets more and more harsh. But, says the Leshem, the fact is, this is why Hashem designed negativity. This is why Hashem designed catastrophe, breakdowns, disasters, things not working out. The fact is that when things don't work out, when it's not smooth sailing, when things are harder, lo aleinu, it actually fuels more divine revelation in heaven. This is the secret why we know. It says, at first, Hashem went up in his mind to create the world with the attribute of harsh severity. He saw it wouldn't stand, and he paired with it the attribute of compassion. God forbid, this doesn't mean that Hashem made a mistake. Let me create the world with strict justice. Oh, I messed up, it didn't work out. Let me try again. Not at all. Why would it go up in his thought at first to create the world with strict justice, with harshness? Because harshness is the thing that pulls out the most revelation of godliness. When things are intense, when things are difficult, there's a greater expression of a person's righteousness, and there's a greater expression of Hashem's powers of healing to heal that intensity. But obviously, Hashem knew what he was doing. He first expressed the maximum of intensity. This is called the Shviras HaKelim, the breaking of the vessels. He knew it wouldn't last. He wanted to create intensity in the creation, but he also wanted us to be able to stand this. We can't withstand total intensity. That's horrible. But what he does is he takes that intensity and he distributes it across a 6,000-year project called history, such that Rabbi Nachman says, people say that it's easy to believe in an Olam Haba. I believe in a future world. I believe in a world of perfection. Obviously. Why would Hashem create a world for no point? If Hashem, the brilliant designer of this reality, the maker of reality, he's pretty good. He has an amazing, amazing conclusion to this amazing reality. The creator of reality is taking this reality to an amazing place. That's obvious to logic. But I have a harder time, says Rabbi Nachman, believing in this world, in an Olam Haza, because all I see is Gehenna. All I see is suffering. And that's the way the Leshem describes it. The truth is that our constitutiveness in the physical, our being constituted in this physical world, as we described, it's constantly breaking down. That's Gehenna. We are in basically the edge of Gehenna. And when we talk about people going to Gehenna, lo aleinu, because they didn't complete their mission in this world, That's just like a place that's even more exposed to this chaotic nature of our existence, that it's constantly slipping away. But the fact is that our everyday normal experience in the physical world is basically painful because everything is slipping away. The only thing that's permanent is the Torah and the mitzvos. Even a person who gets very wealthy knows he's going to lose that when he passes on from this physical plane and give it to his descendants. Okay, but it won't be his. So what is ours forever is the spiritual things that we help co-create with Hashem. So this is what Joseph was saying to his brothers. Don't be sad because Hashem sent me for a great enlivening. He's saying, in a deep place, I was separated from my father and from you for 22 years. That's how long it was, 22 years. Joseph was Yaakov's prized Torah student. And right when Joseph was really getting started, age 17, the brothers sold him to slavery. Think about this like this. From age 22 to 35... Sorry, from age 17 to 35, yeah, which is the 22-year separation, or 34. I'm sorry, what's 7? Either way, the 22 years of separation, those were the prime years of Yosef's real burgeoning Torah prowess. And Yaakov was his teacher. Yaakov, the man of Torah. Right there was a huge loss. It reminds me that there's a din, there's a law in Chol Hamoed, in Hilchos Chol Hamoed, that on Chol Hamoed, the intermediate days of a festival, we're not supposed to do work unless it's a davar avon, unless it's an extreme loss. So we know the festivals begin and end with you can't do work. But in the middle days of the festivals, you can do work if you're going to suffer an extreme loss, like you have you're a wine merchant and there was a mistake or an accident and you couldn't seal your barrels to preserve your wine, and if you don't seal your barrels of wine, you know, during Chol Hamoed, you're going to lose, you know, $400,000 of your merchandise. Okay? So you're allowed to do that. It's called a davar avod, a great loss. Says the Mishnah Berurah and the poskim. You know what else is a davar avod? You know what else is an extreme loss if you don't do work? Writing down your chidushei Torah. Writing down your deep insights in Torah. So of course you can use your pen and do malachim, do work on Chol Hamoed and write down your chidushei Torah. Because otherwise you'd lose it. Or record it on a device like I'm doing. So what a davar avod, what a great loss. 22 years that Yaakov and Yosef could have been learning Torah together and producing so much Torah. And not only that, even when they were united, Joseph is stuck managing the country of Egypt. What a loss. So it's not a loss. This is what Joseph is saying. It's a deeper lesson than just don't feel bad that you sold me. This is a lesson to all of us when we feel like we're dealing with constant waste of time in the physical world, that we build something for it to just fall apart. And as we're about to see in Sefer Shmos, and Parsha Shmos, when the Jewish people are building Pitom and Ramses, the Midrash is saying they would suffer the tremendous trauma of building up huge cities for Pharaoh, and then they would just fall apart. It's a lahavdil, but in the Greek mythology, it's Sisyphus. He's rolling a boulder up the hill, and it just crashes down again. This is hellish. This is suffering. It's not according to our Holy Torah. Nothing. No experience that emerges in reality is ever a waste. Hashem already designed it. He was already olam machshava b'midas adin. He already created and thought up every way that these holy sparks of reality would come out in their time to further and further and further the project of maximizing divine revelation, which is a permanent game, a permanent fixture forever for human consciousness to enjoy forever. So nothing's a waste of time. We don't want to intentionally waste time. In many ways, when a person has the opportunity to study Torah, do kindness, do a mitzvah, do a prayer, connect spiritually, and in an obvious, direct way, connect to Hashem, and he doesn't, and he's sinning, or he's wasting his time, this is a terrible thing. Besides Gehenna, there's this concept of kaf hakela, that a person who's constantly chattering, mainly, and just talking just to hear himself talk, God forbid, has to suffer what's called the universal slingshot. He has to be thrown from one end of the universe to the other in a very violent way because of his wasted words. And I don't quite understand why that's the measure for measure. But either way, you know, but even that guy who was wasting his words, that will have a healing. That will be rectified, and somehow Hashem will use it as a basis, as a prop, to also rectify and bring out maximized divine revelation. Meaning, everything that occurs is furthering God's revelation. Now, it's fascinating that Yosef was separated from Yaakov for 22 years. 22 is the gematria, the numerical value of chita, of wheat. Wheat. And chita, wheat, sounds like chet, sin, the sin of the tree of knowledge. What do we have to do with wheat to make it bread? We have to plant it, harvest it, hoe the ground, break it down, make it flour, make it bread, sell it in market economies. And as Rabbi Shimon Rashbi says, what about the Torah? When are we going to ever have time to study Torah? We're constantly toiling in this physical world because of the sin of Adam. But Rashbi also, he merited the Holy Zohar by having to run away from the Romans and sit in a cave for over 10 years and suffer tremendous lacerations to his body, which seems like a waste. Like, how is this helpful? But it's the same thing. The suffering that we go through, as Hashem says to Adam, "Bezanta pechotecha lechem," with the sweat of your brow, you'll eat bread. Actually, in a way, we gain. We get more Torah, eventually, through the calamity of the sin of the tree of knowledge, through the calamity of the world becoming more physicalized, and therefore constantly breaking down and decaying. This difficulty maximizes divine revelation, because since there's more actions that have to come out in this experience, there's therefore, so to speak, more divine revelation, which we gain forever. So the 22 years that Yosef was separated from Yaakov, Yosef is saying in a deep place, don't be sad. Don't get caught in the illusion that what's dirt and dust is just going to be buried, that the moment is lost, and whenever things don't go your way, it's a burial. It's a loss. It's a waste of time. Don't get caught in that illusion. That's making a mistake of being caught only on the physical side of things. The physical side of things is the tiniest tip of the iceberg, because it's true. Things break down, things decay, things don't work out a lot. In fact, that's the general rule. But that's only from the physical side of things. But that very difficult nature of things is an amazing way fueling an even greater divine revelation. It's fascinating that the Midrash in Bereishis Rabbah, Parak Aleph, Midrash number 14, explains that Rabbi Akiva, he served Nachum Ish Gamzu for 22 years. Nachum Ish Gamzu was the one who said Gamzu Latova. This too is for the good. It's fascinating. 22 years, the exact amount of years that Yosef was separated from Yaakov. And Nachum Ish Gamzu, he was the one who was darshaning all the etz in the Torah, when it says, for example, Bereishis Bara Elohim et ha-shamayim ve'et ha-aretz. God created the heavens and the earth, but it says et. Aleph through Tav is the 22 letters. To say, according to Rashi and the Kabbalists, that when Hashem created all existence, he, just like in the way that the 22 Hebrew letters of the alphabet, okay, encapsulate all that could be said, so too, when Hashem created the heavens and the earth, according to the Ramban, according to all the Tzaddikim, he didn't just create the heavens and the earth. He created the potential of all that would ever come out in the heavens and the earth, which is exactly what we're saying. So Bezer Hashem will really hook into this perspective of never ever seeing something as a waste. We try our best to be as productive as we can, spiritually speaking, and when we go on business and try to make money, that's for a spiritual reason, to support our families and give tzedakah and all wonderful things. But often, something doesn't work out. This is late. This isn't the way I wanted it to go. And we get frustrated. We have to understand this deep yesod, that it's always a lemechia gadola. It's always for a great enlivening. Specific, lo aleinu, things should go as smoothly as they possibly can in revealed ways. But when they don't, we have to understand we shouldn't kick. We shouldn't get upset. We shouldn't, God forbid, think that things are ever, for an iota of a second, not moving forward the ultimate project of revelation of godly expression, Bezrat Hashem.